It's done.
Connor McDavid! It's not real!
The goal of the year?
Panarin!
Part of the past. The celebrations? Forgotten. The history?
Vegas Golden Knights!
History. We're back to a blank slate. Clean ice. All that matters now is what happens next. The Stanley Cup Playoffs.
Eastern Conference Final begins Wednesday.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to the Orange and Brown Talk podcast here on a Thursday. Dan Lobby with Mary Kay Cabot and Ashley Bastock. We've got a couple of Zoom calls to recap today, and the Browns made a free agent signing as well. I guess let's start there. Let's just start with the news today. Devin Bush, former first round pick of the Steelers, number 10 overall, coming to Cleveland. Did not obviously stick in Pittsburgh. They let him walk after his first 4 years. They declined that fifth-year option. He played a year in Seattle, and now he's coming to Cleveland, Mary Kay. So that linebacking core, and we're going to talk a little bit about Jordan Hicks, too, who we got to hear on Zoom literally like 15 minutes before we hit record on this podcast. That linebacking core is starting to come together a little bit.
It really is. And it's different. It's very different. Jordan Hicks will probably replace one of the inside linebackers, Sione Takitaki or Anthony Walker, but so will Devin Bush. So now they've got a couple of inside backers, but you know, these guys are usually interchangeable. So I'm sure everybody will kind of play inside and play outside, but it's definitely a new look room. Devin Bush, I wrote the story on him earlier today. He just signed a little bit ago, before we started taping this. He signed a one-year contract with the Browns. And if some Browns fans remember, he actually suffered a torn ACL in week 6 in his second season against the Cleveland Browns. So kind of ironic. He's never really been the same since then. In his rookie year, he got off to a phenomenal start in Pittsburgh. He had 109 tackles that year. He had like 30 something in his first 3 weeks, and he had 9 or 10 tackles for loss. He was off to just a great start, and it looked like he was going to be living up to his number 10 overall status, and that the Steelers had hit upon another one of these amazing defenders. That's what it seemed like it was going to be. Then he suffers the torn ACL trying to tackle Dearness Johnson, and he was just never the same after that. He was never the same, and they did not pick up his fifth-year option. They let him walk after last year. He went out to Seattle, played in Seattle last year, and really didn't get on the field very much at all until really kind of the end of the season. But when he did get on the field in the end of the season, he was very productive. He was very productive in those final 3 games that he played, notching 30 tackles in those final 3 or 4 games and 4 tackles for a loss. So he did a really nice job when he got in there. This is a chance for him to come, try to put himself back on the map again, rekindle some of that rookie magic that he had with the Pittsburgh Steelers, and to experience life on the other side of the Turnpike rivalry. And then, as we have come to find out, his father played for the Cleveland Browns for a couple of years in 2001 and 2002. He was a safety. So I'm sure this means a lot for Devin Bush to be here.
I'm kind of thinking back to the 2019 draft. And I remember when the Steelers traded up to get him, like, it was like, oh, of course the Steelers traded up to get this linebacker. He's going to just become another great Steelers defender. And I mean, you're right, Mary Kay, he was off to a great start. He was third in Defensive Rookie of the Year voting that year. You mentioned the 109 tackles, and he just hasn't been that guy since. You know, and going back to his draft stuff, a 4.43 40. I mean, this guy was on a path to become a really good player. And I think, Ashley, the hope here is you put him in this Jim Schwartz system where it's kind of just go get the football. We saw how Takitaki thrives in it. We've seen how JOK has thrived in it. It's not real complicated for the linebackers. You go and get the football. It seems like an athletic guy like Devin Bush with his background could come in and kind of rekindle things a little bit here.
Yeah, we did just hear Jordan Hicks allude to that. I know we're going to talk a little bit about Jordan a bit later, but Jordan obviously has played in this system before. He played under Jim for 3 years in Philly together. And he made the comment today that I thought was really interesting about how when he thinks about the freest he's ever played and the least amount of thinking he had to do, just react, it was in that defense in Philly. So I think on the surface level, when we talk about a Jim Schwartz scheme, we're always like, and the linebackers like don't really have a set assignment necessarily, or they don't have a ton to do. It allows them to only play two linebackers a lot of the time even. But that read react is really good when you have a guy that's athletic like Devin Bush or like JOK. I think it's why we saw JOK really jump or pop off the field, especially towards the end of the season. And I also wonder, Devin Bush is probably looking at a guy like, it's obviously in front of the linebackers, but his former college teammate, Mo Hurst, who had similar issues, obviously not the same injury, and he wasn't as highly lauded coming out of Michigan when that draft was going on. But Mo came to Cleveland and basically had a chance to revive his career in this scheme. And it did, you know, I think go very well for him. He did get injured, but it's another guy he knows that he saw come in and have success in this defense. So I imagine that that's exciting, an exciting prospect too.
Mary Kay, I always think there's value in a guy like he's coming here. Yes, he was the number 10 overall pick, but if the Browns didn't pick him number 10 overall, that was 5 years ago. That was two teams ago. He's coming here as a guy on a 1 year deal, just kind of trying to get his career back on track. The pressure on him here, as opposed to what it was in Pittsburgh, is much different. And I think that can sometimes be freeing for a guy. So when you take a chance on a guy who is good enough to go number 10 overall, you're just kind of hoping that those traits and that ability can take over. And like we were saying, in this scheme, it certainly could have a chance to.
Absolutely. What an opportunity for him to come in here. Once again, he's going to have some special kind of feeling, I think, for the Cleveland Browns, knowing that his dad played here. I'm sure his dad is going to be very, very excited about this. And then again, you know, maybe there is a little something to having had his career turn in that game against the Cleveland Browns. So I think he probably has a lot to prove. I think he probably wants to show the Pittsburgh Steelers that he does have plenty of left in the tank and that they didn't make a mistake on him in 2019. So I think this is going to be very meaningful, maybe even very emotional for him. And he lands in a linebacker room that I think he's really going to like. As we just mentioned, we got off of Zoom a little while ago with Jordan Hicks. He's an older guy. He's been around for a long time, as have some of the other defenders now on this Jim Schwartz defense. And he's a mentor guy, willing and ready to impart all of his wisdom on some of these younger guys. So I think that's going to be a good vibe for the room. It sort of has an Anthony Walker Jr. feel to it. And then you've got JOK, who is just really coming into his own, really jumping off the page and becoming that dynamic linebacker that the Browns drafted him to be in the second round. So I think there's a lot of good going on here. There's a new energy at the position, and it's almost in some ways been a little bit overlooked, at least not the marquee position on this defense, but I think that's changing a little bit.
Let's talk about one more signing today before we get to the Zooms and the guys we heard from. And that, of course, is Quentin Jefferson, who's going to sign with the Browns as well. We talked on Wednesday's pod that this team felt like a tackle short on the inside. Jefferson's a guy that can play inside and outside, has done both in his career, kind of fits that Jim Schwartz mold of a versatile D lineman that you can kind of put anywhere. So, you know, Ashley, the Browns haven't really had that big splash signing, but they've had some kind of nice solid signings. You see how guys can fit. And I think Quentin Jefferson kind of falls into that as well.
Yeah, Quentin had 6 sacks last year in like 14 games, I think it was. So he got after quarterbacks. And I think we know that they like that from those guys on the interior. But for me, I think it just kind of once again shows Andrew Berry maybe reverting to some old tendencies, because again, the only individual player on the interior line that we've seen him shell out a big contract to is Dalvin Tomlinson. And historically, they haven't worked that way in this regime. They've kind of piecemealed that interior together, whether it's through the draft or some smaller quote-unquote signing. So I'm kind of not surprised that we didn't get that splashy signing. But yeah, I wish we would have. And now I think like all the big guys are off the market, including Eric Armstead. So that's probably done for right now, barring something unexpected.
Yeah, the Dalvin thing almost felt like, you just have to do this. You have no choice. And of course, they were looking at Javon Hargrave as well. But it was like, these defensive tackles were so bad, and you were hiring Jim Schwartz. Like, you might not love to do it. You better go spend a bunch of money on a tackle. I was looking earlier, Mary Kay. I have it pulled up now on PFF. This is a guy that played, according to their data, 232 snaps at left end, another, almost 200 snaps at tackle last year. You kind of look throughout his career, he's been able to really kind of split both of those positions. And we know that Jim Schwartz on that defensive line, he likes to move guys inside. He likes to move guys around outside of, like Dalvin and some other people. You could end up lining up anywhere. So I think Quentin Jefferson could be a nice fit on this defensive front.
I think so too. Again, it's not the sexiest move. It's not the splashiest move, but they did need some interior pressure. And as you both mentioned, that he can play inside and he can play outside. And that's so important in Jim Schwartz's defense to have that kind of versatility. But it seems to me that he will probably be maybe a little bit more of an inside guy. We don't know yet. We have to talk to Kevin Stefanski about that. We have to talk to Jim Schwartz about that. And I'll get a chance to talk to Kevin Stefanski at the owners' meetings leaving next Saturday for that, not this Saturday, but the Saturday after that, where we can kind of dig into some of these guys a little bit more. But he does seem like someone that can bring that push from the middle. And quarterbacks hate it. Offensive coordinators hate it. It's very, very disruptive, and he probably will pair very, very nicely with Dalvin. And then, of course, you've got Mo, you've got Shelby. So they've got some pieces and parts that they can move in and out and do some cool things with. And then, the other thing about these guys, I think we're seeing here, is that Jim Schwartz and Andrew Berry are showing that they value some veteran experience. We've got guys here that have played for 10 years, 11 years. They're turning 31, 32. I'm talking about Za'Darius Smith, Quentin Jefferson, Jordan Hicks, Shelby Harris, to name most of them, I think. These are all guys that have been around for a long time. They can all talk about where their kids are going to school, what they're going to be for Halloween. I mean, like, we've got a lot of dads. Well, we might need some rocking chairs in the locker room this year. But no, Jim Schwartz, he's an old school coach. He's an old school coach. And those kind of guys, they love to have these older, savvy veterans around that can show the younger guys the way. So they've stocked up on some of those guys, and I think it'll go a long way.
Yeah, and they kind of police the locker room too. They sort of make sure everybody's doing what they're supposed to do. They set a tone. They've been around. That's exactly what you want. That's what a locker room is supposed to be. So that's good as well. So let's take a break, and then let's talk about the guys that we heard from today on Zoom. I'm back on the Orange and Brown Talk podcast. Dan Lobby, Mary Kay Cabot, Ashley Bastock. So we heard from Jerry Jeudy today. We heard from Jordan Hicks today, both via Zoom. Let's start with Jerry. Mary Kay, what stood out to you? Did he say anything that kind of caught your attention today?
He was all about fresh start, new beginnings, and I think that's important. He's had a bit of a topsy-turvy, tumultuous career in Denver. This is an opportunity for him to have some stability. Last year was challenging for him. In addition to feeling like Russell Wilson was looking away from him at times when he was open, he had the big controversy mid-season where he just got ripped to shreds by Steve Smith Sr. So I asked him about that today, and I thought he gave a very good answer. He talked about how he was grateful that the Browns overlooked what Steve Smith said, the fact that they kept coming back after him. He feels very wanted here, but I think he's looking at this as an opportunity to not only have a fresh start, but to really make Amari Cooper proud of him. He looks up to Amari Cooper, idolizes him, and I really think that he's going to want to be the best version of himself, not just for the Cleveland Browns, but for his idol, Amari Cooper.
Yeah, I think I got the same vibes, Ashley, just sort of the fresh start that, hey, whatever happened in Denver happened. It's on to Cleveland now. He wants to show the type of receiver he can be. And this goes back to what we were talking about right before the break. And you wrote a story on it towards, I think, right before the playoff game about Amari in that wide receiver room and what he means to those young guys. Like it's putting a guy in a spot where he's going to be mentored and brought along by Amari, by these quarterbacks. It's set up for him to be successful. If he's not successful, he's not really going to have anybody to blame but himself.
Yeah, it's very similar. His background with Amari Cooper, he's even closer to Amari Cooper than Elijah Moore was. But for me, their backgrounds are very similar because they're younger than him. They're all South Florida guys. And those two in particular have talked about at length watching Amari back when he was in high school or they were in high school sometimes. So there's a big familiarity with his game, big looking up to him. Obviously, Jerry and Amari both went to Alabama. He talked a little bit about that relationship today, but you're right. I think Amari Cooper, you've kind of seen him step into that role, that really true veteran teacher role in this room. And I think a big part of it is because that room is filled with, you know, relatively young guys and potential these last few years. And when I talked to him for that story, I talked to him a lot about, hey, how do you view stepping into that kind of leadership role and mentoring guys? And he kind of got philosophical with me, as Amari tends to do, but he made this comment about, I never like really offer my opinions unsolicited to guys. Like I have to know that they want to come to me and want my advice. And he used the quote, something like the teacher will appear when the student is ready, something along those lines. So yeah, I mean, I think they have this established relationship already that is going to work in Jerry Jeudy's favor, but he definitely, I think, is going to have to be a little proactive in maintaining that mentorship because that's just kind of Amari's style.
I also think, you know, I mean, Amari's a no excuses guy. That's one of the things. Like, it doesn't matter throughout his career. Like, it doesn't matter who his quarterbacks have been. It doesn't matter where he's been playing. He's just produced constantly over and over again. And no matter who's throwing him the football, no matter the situation, and Mary Kay, I think I just think that example that he sets, like no matter what's going on, he's going to show up and do his job and he's going to produce. That's got to rub off on guys.
It does. And I've seen so many receiver rooms over the years where the young guys do not have that mentor to look up to and show them the way. You don't get to become the route runner unless you're working really, really hard at your craft. And I just think it's so great for these young guys, not only Jerry Jeudy and not only Elijah Moore, but David Bell, Cedric Tillman, Michael Woods, for all of them to have Amari in there showing them the way. It's so vitally important. You have to operate at such a high level. And that position, you have to be so precise, so good at your job. Your hands have to be so good, your route running. And I just think that Amari will set a tremendous example for these guys. And they are going to all want to do whatever they can to be like him, a 5-time Pro Bowler. That speaks to young guys. It really does. If you've made the Pro Bowl 5 times, they know that they have to listen to you. So he's going to be really, really good for every single one of these guys.
All right, let's talk about the other guy that we heard from. We've mentioned his name a couple times, Jordan Hicks. Ashley, a guy who played for Jim Schwartz, knows what Jim Schwartz wants. Didn't get to go on that Super Bowl run with the Eagles because of an Achilles injury. But he's back with Jim, seems to be happy to be back with Jim, and like has a lot of connections to this defense as well with Zadarius and Dalvin. Of course, you know, new Rodney McLeod from Philly. We don't know if Rodney's going to be back or not, but a lot of connections to this defense as well beyond just Jim.
Yeah, I think it's great that they locked him up, especially with not knowing exactly where Rodney is going to be next year. I mean, Rodney's coming back from that biceps injury anyway. But before Rodney got hurt, I think we saw how valuable it was to kind of have that institutional knowledge of a Jim Schwartz scheme and how guys really gravitated toward Rodney. And I think just how important that knowledge was as they tried to implement this scheme this past year. And yeah, like not everyone's going to be new to it this upcoming year like they were last year when Jim just got hired. But I think that still helps, especially in that linebacker room, because everyone is basically going to be new besides JOK right now. So I love this addition. I think when we heard him talk, we came away, I think I said he's going to be like the new Anthony Walker Jr., just that very gregarious talker in the locker room, very mature, maybe a bit more mature than AWOC, no disrespect, but we know how much he liked to joke. So yeah, I think that that age and that knowledge of Jim's scheme really just beneficial X factors in this signing.
Mary Kay, you can always just kind of tell with a guy when he sits down in front of the camera for a Zoom or sits down for a press conference or whatever, like, because this is the first impression a lot of these guys are going to make on us, at least. And so you can always kind of tell with a guy. And Jordan is one of those guys. AWOC was always one of those guys. I mean, we can just go through and list the ones that sort of stand out. I mean, Jordan wanted to set a tone today when he talked to us, right? Like professional, leader, veteran, all of that stuff. You can always just kind of tell the first impression that these guys want to make when they talk to us. And all of those traits kind of came through.
They really did. And I think while he was talking, I was thinking, this is sort of the new culture of the Cleveland Browns. This is the kind of guy they're going for. That smart, tough, accountable guy, great personality. I think he's going to be great for the locker room. I think he's going to help the fans understand and sort of be a voice for the team. I know we are going to be around his locker during the week and after games. I can already tell he's that guy. And I just think that you're seeing more and more of those guys. It does take a while to stock your locker room with the kind of guy that you really like. And he's one of them. He's absolutely one of them. And there are plenty of guys like that on this football team right now that any Browns fan would be honored to have them sitting at their dinner table with them. They're just really good guys and good mentors, good family men. Jordan Hicks was talking about the fact that he's got three kids. So again, we've got some guys on the team now that have, you know, things larger than themselves that they have to worry about as well. So yeah, I really liked him a lot. I could tell right away. And I think we could all tell right away that he's going to be one of our go-to guys.
And you need that. You need guys, you know, AWOC was that guy. I actually think Taki didn't seek it out as much, but whenever we talked to him, he was a guy that was very good after games, and you could talk to him. You know, he would talk a lot on Mondays after games. I mean, you do need guys in that locker room who can be spokespeople for your team, who can say what needs to be said, say it the way it needs to be said. Maybe not do the John Johnson, hey, guys aren't watching film thing. Although we love when guys do that. I'm sure the coaches don't love that. Just do it tactfully and be the spokesperson for your team and good moments, bad moments. And that's a really important thing to have because we are in open locker rooms 4 days a week and we're in open locker rooms after games. You don't have a lot of control over what's going on in there. So to have a Jordan Hicks who can sort of control that message, it's sort of an underrated part of all this.
Yeah. And I think too, we got to see this a little bit last year, and maybe it was some of the additions last year as well that kind of helped this along. And I think also obviously winning helped, but these guys really gravitated towards Kevin Stefanski's message along. How many times last year did we say, man, these guys are just parroting exactly what Kevin said or would say. And it was really obvious that they were all kind of falling in line with that. And I do think when you have these veterans in the locker room like that, you're more prone to get more players to kind of act like that and toe the company line, so to speak, in terms of what your messaging is. So yeah, I agree. Sometimes it makes for boring interviews or more boring interviews than if somebody's just going off. But I think from a team standpoint, it's definitely valuable to have those kind of personalities.
I think another thing about this whole situation is the fact that this is a football team that is going to be spending the first 10 days of training camp again at the Greenbrier. And this is a team that is hoping against hope that it is going to start the season in Brazil. And then they want to go all the way this year. They were not satisfied with not winning the AFC North. So now they've got veteran leadership. And that is often the key to a team going all the way. Leadership is so vitally, vitally important. And just in talking to Jordan Hicks today, I think that we can see that the leadership that walked out the door with Anthony Walker, who he was right up there. There are not that many great leaders in the NFL. Anthony Walker was one of them. Jacoby Brissett was one of them. That was another reason that they hoped to have him back. And these guys, some of these guys bring that, and they're going to need that. Their backup quarterback is 30 years old and has been around for a long, long time in Jameis Winston as well, and brings a very dynamic leadership to the table. Also a family man now with kids and whatnot. So for a team that's going to be on the move again, and with the stakes being so high, I think these are very strategic moves.
And, you know, to take it back to that 2017 Eagles team, that was a team that went through a lot. You know, they lost their starting quarterback. They had to sort of remake things. And you had guys like a Rodney McLeod. You know, I don't know how much Jordan was around the team at that time. But if he was, obviously he would have been, you know, they bring in a veteran like a Chris Long, who had won a Super Bowl with the Patriots the year before. I mean, when you hear guys talk about that group that was in Philly, that's as much the group that they had and the tightness they had, the togetherness they had, you know, Jason Kelce. There's just a long list of guys. That's part of why they were able to kind of do the unthinkable there and go win the Super Bowl. And Andrew was in Philadelphia for a couple of years. So he, obviously not when they won, but he was around Howie and around the people that built that team. So he kind of knows how important that is. And I'm sure Kevin knows as well. So I think it's important. You know, it's not really quantifiable, but I do think it's a really important thing when you're trying to go win and win big. And when you're trying to do it, showing up at the Greenbrier on July 20th or whatever, and you're trying to have the longest season you've ever had. I don't know. We need some leadership. That's what we need. We need some veteran leadership. Maybe Chris Easterling can step up and guide us through this super long season.
Well, we might get some Marriott points. So
that's true.
Take it.
All right. I think that's everything here on the Orange and Brown Talk podcast. Make sure you're following us on Instagram. Search Orange and Brown Talk. Find us on YouTube. Cleveland Browns on Cleveland.com. Become a football insider subscriber. Cleveland.com/Browns. The blue banner at the top of the page. And of course, subscribe to this podcast on Apple Podcasts and Spotify. For Mary Kay and Ashley, I'm Dan. Thanks for listening, everybody.